We're going to be, of course, in Exodus, the 24th chapter. And after this particular chapter, the rest of the book of Exodus is all about the tabernacle, which can be sometimes a little bit long, but I'll do my very best to shorten it up as best as possible, but also to describe as best as we can come to understand the purpose of its design. And not just because it was commanded, but what God had actually seen or wants us to see in relation to what is comparable or compared to his throne up there in his heaven and his throne.
Then he said to Moshe, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. Moshe alone shall come near to the Lord, but the others shall not come near, and the people shall not come up with him." Moshe came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the rules. And the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words that the Lord has spoken we will do." And Moshe wrote down all the words of the Lord. He rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain, and 12 pillars, according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the people of Israel, who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And Moshe took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he threw against the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, "All that the Lord has spoken we will do, and we will be obedient." And Moshe took the blood and threw it on the people and said, "Behold, the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words." Then Moshe and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel went up, and they saw the God of Israel. There was under his feet as it were a pavement of sapphire stone, like the very heaven for clearness. And he did not lay his hand on the chief men of the people of Israel. They beheld God and ate and drank. The Lord said to Moshe, "Come up to me on the mountain and wait there, that I may give you the tablets of stone, with the law and the commandment which I have written for their instruction." So Moshe rose with his assistant Yehoshua, and Moshe went up into the mountain of God. And he said to the elders, "Wait here for us until we return to you. And behold, Aharon and Hur, which are with you, whoever has a dispute, let him go to them." Then Moshe went up the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. The glory of the Lord dwelt on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days. And the seventh day he called to Moshe out of the midst of the cloud. Now the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a devouring fire on the top of the mountain in the sight of the people of Israel. Moshe entered the cloud and went up on the mountain. And Moshe was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights.
Okay, any thoughts? Unusual statements.
So Moses sat there and waited for 7 days.
6 days and the seventh day.
The seventh day, he just waited. Wow!
Yes. Someday I will try to explain why he had to wait 7 days. He had to do it one more time. Wait up there for 7 days for a purpose, and it has to deal with a certain, I would say, a Moedim timing. They saw God. Yes. So there's a little bit of conflict there, isn't there? One says no, one the other says yes, they did. No one said no. What's this all about? You know. So what do you think? Did they see him or did they not see him? Well, they perceived him. Did they perceive him? Do they perceive them? What's the word you want to use?
His presence.
His presence, they saw his presence. Okay. What did they actually see?
Did they see his glory?
Uh-huh. there's where the word changes. All right, so you know what's very fascinating at this particular point in time? That we have to find or think about why is it that God specifically wanted not just Moses, but Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, along with 70 of the elders of Israel. Why did he want to see them? Why did he want them to come?
So that they could be a witness to the others, and they would know that it was real. This was not Moses giving them the laws and the rules, but they also saw.
Okay, that's good. You must have thought about that, or did you research it, or does it make sense?
Well, it seems logical.
It seems logical, right? Because exactly, in a sense, is exactly what took place in a lot of ways. Now, how did God reveal himself? Way back in Numbers 11th chapter talks about these 70 elders again. We'll talk about them much later when we read the 11th chapter. But in verse 2 of Exodus 24, "And Moses alone shall come near to Yahuwah, but they shall not come near, neither shall the people come with him." So there was a distance between where Moses was to be and the 70 elders and the other three men. Aaron has been known as the light bringer, or the one that controls the light, the one that has light, representing, of course, the high priest, representing, of course, the Messiah being the one who brings the light. And then we have Nabob, which means generous, one who's generous. And Abihu is, he is my father. So it's kind of a parallel in here. You see these names have a connection with one another of them by itself. And very fascinating when you stop and think about it. He is my father, the high priest, and he's generous, and he is my father. All three names are very fascinating, or I should say, the light bringer, generous, and he is my father. You know, it kind of reminds you of the Messiah. He's always talked about my father is generous, very generous, very, very kind, very merciful. Is his good nature to give you the kingdom of God? And verse 3, "And Moses came and told the people," that is the 70. Because remember, the elders were there, along with the other three men. Moses went ahead, all right, and God talked to him. But Moses came and told the 70 elders all the words of Yahuwah and all the judgments, okay, and what they call statutes, or they call, we translate as rules. And anyway, "And the people, the 70 elders, answered and said in one accord, all the words which Yahuwah has said, we will do." Now, very important to know it was the 70 elders. Because later on, we find something very interesting here. This is the written agreement. Did you catch verse 4? "And Moses wrote all the words that Yahuwah, and rose up early in the morning and built an altar under the hill and the 12 pillars according to the tribes of Israel." And of course, he sent, it says there, by the way, go back to Exodus, the 20th chapter, he talked about two things that you are to do when you build an altar, two offerings you are to offer when you built that altar. And in Exodus it says, in the 20th chapter it says, a whole offering and a peace offering. And so this is exactly what Moses had them do. Yes?
I wanted to find out, you hear a lot of controversy about people say, oh, because the Jews said, oh, we will obey every word Adonai has spoken.
Right.
So can you elaborate on that? We will obey every word that was spoken. A lot of people hear that and they think, they agreed too hastily to agree without.
Well, that's.
I mean, I wanted you to elaborate on that. Is it irrelevant now so far?
Well, I've never heard it. I'm not saying it. They didn't say it. But every word, yes. Both Moses and Yahshua said, you'll live by some of the words, just a few of them, but the ones you like? No, every word. Now, should we regret that?
No, I thought...
Because we were, quote, hasty, too quick? No, that's a cop-out.
Yeah,
my opinion is a 100% cop-out, because these guys didn't cop-out.
Yeah.
They didn't cop-out. They agreed to it. Now, in Romans, in the 11th chapter of Numbers, these were not just ordinary individuals. Now, let's go back here and find out about these 70 elders, because it's very important to know who they are and why he chose them and why he called them what he called them. You mean he called them a certain name? He called 70 people a certain title, a certain characteristic about them? We'll get there in a minute. So it should answer your question. They was not in haste. These are not foolish old men that did not know their front end from the back end. All right? I'm sorry, what?
Numbers 11 what?
Oh. I got that. Numbers 11, verse 16 and 17. About elders, more than 70 elders again. Anyway, let's continue on here. And he says now, and of course Moses took half the blood and put it upon the basins and half the blood sprinkled upon the altar. And he took the book of the covenant. Now remember, this is the book of the covenant. Remember he wrote it down? I have not received the tablets yet. He hasn't gone up there to get the stones. What does he have in his hand? The agreement that the 70 did, speaking for the house of Israel, along with the other three men, that they would do according to all that the Lord commanded. Now in verse 7, he took that book of the covenant, which the 70 elders agreed to do. And now what did he do? He read it in the audience of the people. And then the people said, all that Yahuwah has said, we will do and be obedient. Now, what's a covenant? What is it, the old covenant, a new covenant, agreement? What is it? What is a covenant?
Is it
a what?
A cutting,
okay. Yes, it does come from the word to cut. So you're cutting an agreement with. So what is the agreement about? We will do all what you have said. What did he say? Chapter 21, chapter 22, chapter 23. We went through chapter 21, chapter 22, and chapter 23, didn't we? About the judgments of Elohim. Remember those? Now, he brought those and said, do you agree? He says, yes, we do. Quote, the covenant of Israel has not been established yet. No Ten Commandments been yelled out there. Nothing's been given. Ten Commandments were yelled out there, but nothing has been given yet on stones. It's not written in stone, it's on paper. And those covenant guys say they would agree with it. So now we look at this thing and we say, okay, where do we go from there? After Moses, verse 8, he took the blood, he sprinkled it on the people. Later on you'll find out it's seven times with a finger. It's not by pouring it on him at all. And they made with you concerning all the words that was in that covenant that he wrote down. Okay. Now we go on down to verse, verse 9. After that, then Moses went, and Aaron, and Nadab, and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel. Where'd they go? They saw Elohim of Israel. What did the Elohim of Israel show them? His face? His teeth? His fingers? Feet, we got that part. They saw his feet. What else did they see? They saw something, and basic in Hebrew it means it's transparency. Okay? Clear. And the work of sapphire stone. And they were the body of heaven in his, as the body of heaven in his cleanliness. And in Hebrew it means in his brightness or in his purity. So that's what they saw. Okay? They saw the body of heaven in his clearness or brightness or beauty. Or what was that other word again now? Purity. Now it's quite fascinating because Apostle Paul says something about the days of unleavened bread. He uses those two same phrases, doesn't he? Purity, clearness, cleanness, and purity. So the 70 elders saw, and they were a witness. Witness to what?
I'm just amazed at, can you like elaborate on what is it that they saw? I mean, was this a vision?
This is a vision. No, I don't believe it was a vision at all. I do believe it was what they saw. What they did not see is the glory that Moses saw, a different side or part of the creator of heaven and earth. Well, not only did they see him, they sat and had food with him. It takes a while to eat that much, you know. You got 70 people. It takes a while for them to eat food. You know. Could have been all day long. They saw something. They saw a brightness. They saw a body. They saw the feet. It just tells you where he was standing. And they saw something. And they saw purity. They saw brightness. They saw a glow. What did they see? Did they see an image of a flesh and blood human being? I'm sorry, what? They saw feet. So, what do you think? The only thing they saw was, oh, there's feet and all thing else is invisible. Can't see it. He's standing there and the way he's standing on is completely transparent. And what did they see? It says they saw the body of heaven or from heaven. Now, whether or not we agree or disagree with what is written is not the issue, is it? It's what is written. Now, I know we have this question that goes into time, the Messiah, and he's talking to the Pharisees. And when he is talking to the Pharisees, he said something to them. Do you remember what he said to the Pharisees? You have never heard, nor have you ever seen. He was talking to whom? Pharisees. He wasn't talking to anybody else, just them. Ask yourself a question. Did Abraham see something? Did Joshua see something? Did anybody see something that represented, shall we say, Yahuwah? When they go to Yahuwah, who do they go to? Why do they go there for? Because they know who he is. We don't think so because, see, we live in a world where we don't see God. Because God's not going to reveal himself to us. What has God revealed to us? his son. Now, when you start revealing and seeing the Son, then you realize that you're seeing the Father. What does the Father want you to see? How gorgeous he is? Does he got paint on his toenails? Does he have an earring in his ear? Does he have a gorgeous, you know, look and face that's gorgeous? Doesn't say that, does it? What are you supposed to see? Clarity. Truth. Do you understand what I'm saying now? And so there they were. And in verse 11, in Old English, it says, upon the nobles of the children of Israel, he laid not a hand. They saw Elohim and did eat and did drink. He laid not a hand on them. Wait a minute. What is that talking about?
The Father is spirit, right?
Right.
So if they're seeing feet and hands, that's got to be Yeshua.
It's got to be what?
That's got to be Yeshua. They're seeing feet and hands.
Oh, yeah, okay. I understand what you're saying, yes. So why is the scripture saying he laid not his hand on them? There they were. They saw. He didn't destroy them. He didn't wipe them out. He didn't kill them. He didn't destroy them. Yes, Ellie?
To me, that's just like Moses, for example. He laid his hand over Moses, so Moses couldn't see. In this case, he didn't lay his hand over. That's all he's saying. They didn't lay his, he didn't conceal himself from them. That's all, as far as how I read it, Paul's saying.
That's a good way to do it, yes.
Well, there's scriptures that say, that, you know, you can't look upon God or you would die. And, I have a problem with, while they can say that, and I understand that particular scripture in that context. However, I do believe people have visions and they see God in different ways all the time. So what they're saying here is that they were allowed this time of covenanting with God, and God was there, and they weren't destroyed.
They didn't speak to them though. He called Moses and spoke to Moses, and they had to go back and tell Moses had to go back and tell them what God said. Yes.
If he laid his hand on them, his purity and righteousness.
Okay. We got it. Word, the word noble. All right. Key on that word called noble or chiefs or honorable. But to be able to understand that, we have to go someplace else. Okay. I want you to go to Isaiah. Yeah, I advise you to read the whole chapter. Oh, you had a question?
Yeah. John 1:18, no one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, who is in the bosom of the Father, has declared him.
So who is the Elohim of Israel?
Yeshua is the God of Israel.
Yeshua is the God of Israel. Yeshua, that was his name at that point in time, but... And he was the God of Israel. And he revealed himself. That's no big deal. He's still the God. He's also called the Holy One of Israel. Right? That's his other title. How do we know it's called the Holy One of Israel? What was on Aaron's crown? The Holy One of Israel. Holy unto the Lord. So there was an image, or a picture, or a scene, which they saw, in a sense, the Holy One of Israel. Isaiah 41. I advise you to read the whole chapter if you can, but right now we're verse 8. But thou, Israel, verse 8, but thou, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend, thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called thee from, and in Greek, Hebrew, it says, the chief or noble ones of the world. And said unto thee, thou art my servant, I have chosen you, and what? Ah. He laid no hands upon the 70. He did not reject them. This is the only place you'll find it in the Bible, by the way, that phrase. Only two places. It's extremely interesting ones. The chief ones, the most important ones, the leadership. I laid no hands upon you. Okay, what did you do? I am not going to throw you away. That's what they saw. That's what they experienced. That's what the 70 revealed, or was revealed to them, of just who they are and how important they are. There's another word for chief. It's also called corner. A corner. What's a corner?
Cornerstone.
You know, there is a chief cornerstone and there are other cornerstones, right? I mean, you build a building, you got this one here, no more corners. Oh, no, no, no. You have other corners to make the building work. And sometimes the building has several corners because it's built all different shapes and sizes, right? So these are 70. I will call them corners. Why 70? Why not 12?
I have to backtrack here because I think I'm with Ellie and a little bit of confusion here.
Which one?
Yeshua is saying no one has seen the Father except for the Son of. Okay, so in here in Exodus, are we seeing the 70 or the elders, are they seeing an aspect attribute
not
of
the,
his?
You didn't see the Father. They didn't see the Father. Who do they see?
They said they saw the God of Israel.
They saw, quote, the Word. And the Word became flesh. What is the Word? Is it the Father or is it the Word? Is the Word the Father or is the Father the Word? What is the Word? It says He is the Word. He is the Logos. What is they talking about? Logos of what? Word of what? Of the Father. He said, that was His name. Yes.
It's a controversial topic in general, but as far as the general idea, the cons behind what I think you're trying to explain, is that God the Creator, we call the Father, was involved most heavily in the first 7 days or so, 6 days of creation. God of Israel, the one we talk about when it talks about the covenants, that when He did this and that, various things about all the Old Testament, that's what we relabeled Him Jesus later on. It's that one who did all the work, did all the stuff. And so that's the one who people were interacting with, was Him, not God the Father created. That's the idea behind it. I'm not saying right or wrong, but that's the idea behind it. So this whole God of Moses isn't the Father the Creator, it's Messiah, who Moses
who said He was there before Abraham was. Remember? He's the one that said, translated in loose English, I am the I am. And He built the stuff because He built the Word of God. When we see the Creator, the Father, Yeshua, you want to say that, who said He built it, He did it by the Word. Whatever the Father said, He did. I'll give you an example. Let's just take, for example, for just a moment. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 1. I find this very fascinating, which is how I look at things. It's not necessarily how others look at it. Go ahead, a question.
Yeah,
or statement?
Oh, just a little bit of clarification. In most places where you see it in the apostolic writings, when it refers to God, it's referring to the Father, except in a few cases where it's clarifying about the Son.
Correct.
Where it keeps using the term Lord, 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 Lord,
yeah.
Lord, Messiah, Yeshua.
Yeah.
Lord, that's Kurio, and if you read in the Septuagint, that is what is used in the place of Yod Heh Vav Heh.
Yes.
In the Septuagint. So, to those people reading this, when they keep hearing Kurio, 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 what are they thinking except Yod Heh Vav Heh? That's what they're thinking.
Correct.
So, when you see all the writers and they're referring, they're saying the Lord Yeshua and God. They're making that distinction in there, and that distinction was pretty clear, except in a couple of cases where further clarification, in case people didn't understand who Yeshua was, it was even further clarified.
Plus, I mean, how many times in the history before, quote, Yeshua sowed of the seed, were people looking for the Son of God? How many were looking for the Son of God? Did any of them look for the Son of God? No! They weren't looking for the Son of God. Who were they looking for? They're looking for the Messiah. They weren't looking for the Son of God. They're looking for the Messiah. What did the Son of God reveal? That he's the Son of God. And they don't like it.
Exodus 33:22. When my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock. Okay. He did see his glory.
Oh, that's later on, yes.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that much later, yes.
But I believe that we are asked to believe all things, also in Scripture. And I see that people try to take this glorious, infinite thing, and we try to bring it down here and make it into something here. We can't do that. And yet we cannot, I don't believe we should limit ourselves from believing in this glory and believing that God reveals this glory to certain people at certain times for certain reasons.
Yeah.
And I can't be that concrete in saying, you know, no one has seen God. I mean, you know, we have to take all this and kind of blend it with all the other. And so I believe all things because Scripture tells me to hope all things and to believe all things. All right. I'm done.
That's so good. I don't disagree with you at all. I don't disagree with you at all.
Yeah, I mean, because...
It makes sense.
I mean, number I one. Really...
Yes.
Okay, what you just read, Exodus 33:22, he did not see him. He says, I'll put you in a crevice and cover you with my hand until I have passed by.
Well, that's a little bit farther on down the line. But
I understand, but I'm saying that's not a sign of you seeing him.
Right.
He protected him from seeing.
Just the hindsight. Well, let me ask you, is God limited to show himself in one view and one view only? No. Well, maybe so.
God is not limited.
We are
limited.
That's because we're limited, we can't limit him. Or we think we should limit him.
Well, he has mercy on us. Because like he says, if you saw all of me, you would die instantly.
You're right.
So God has no limits, but he also has mercy on his children, and
unlimited in that point.
Exactly.
Right. I want to go back to one more thing about how God changes his image. If I could use that terminology. When the Son of God died, and he came back alive, who recognized him immediately? Nobody. Everything was changed about him. He didn't look like the ordinary, quote, Jew, end of quote. He didn't look like the guy that most women wouldn't like to be seen with because he's so ugly. All of a sudden, they saw something different. And he had to manifest himself to his disciples with holes in his hand and in his side for them to understand that it really is him. Right? And he revealed himself. They didn't even know it. The two men walking, they couldn't figure out how come this guy didn't know. Yes.
So, from what Yeshua said, no one has seen the Father, by inference, is like the fullness of. Because here we're talking about, we're seeing different aspects, different attributes, etc.
Right.
So when Yeshua is saying, though, no one has seen the Father, I mean, like, the fullness of. Is that kind of what we're to take
that's
from this?
Let me put it that way. That's fine. That sounds good. I try to figure out exactly. Sometimes I have a viewpoint that's kind of hard to explain. All right? As I told you before, when I read, especially the Bible, I see the actions and deeds and thoughts of God and not of men. All right? And so when God does something, I should be able to see what took place, right? I mean, that's my thinking. So let's just go to Genesis chapter 1 for a moment. I'm only going to phrase this one for you, me to kind of figure out how this old man's thinking thinks, which is different than young men's thinking, or maybe your thinking. Verse 2. Something was happening here. He says, and the earth was without tohu vavohu vahoshech. Well, actually, darkness was on the face of the earth. Then it says something right afterward. The next sentence says what? Spirit of Elohim was hovering over the face of the waters. Now, what was it doing? Well, what does hovering mean? What was wrong with it? It was Hoshech time. And what did he say? Let there be light. Oh. So he worked in Hoshech time. Right? He worked in darkness. And he said, let there be light. There's light. Which is called day. Correct? So he has this thing. He says one thing. And then you should see an event of it happening soon thereafter. Or thereabouts thereafter. When he told the covenant he gave to Abraham, did it happen? Yes or no?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. When did it happen? The promise was Abraham said, in your seed, what? When did that happen? When the Messiah came on the scene the next day, right? So we see the word of Elohim saying, and it came to pass. That should be proof for us to know that whatever he says, it will occur and come around. Unlike me, I'm a called mechanical design engineer, whatever that means. I can design something on paper. I can make it look neat. I can do all the details. But if it never goes from the paper to the machine shop to the builders, it doesn't exist. Simple as that. Now, when God designs something, it does go into the builders and they build. Who was building it? Yahshua was building it. He's the worker. Is the one that works for God. So that's how I kind of look at world. I look at life. Getting late, isn't it? Okay, let me see if I can't get up. Where were we at? We were in about nobles, noble people. Now, verse 12 of Exodus 24. And Yeshua said to Moses, come up to me into the mountain and be there, and I will give you the tablets of stone and the Torah, or the directions, or the instructions, and the commandments. Now, what's the difference between the two? There is two different things he's given them. Not just one, but two. which I have written, and thou shalt teach them. Teach whom? The 70 who were witnesses to what was going on. You remember when Moses had to go and strike the rock? You remember the time he struck the rock for water to come out? Was he there all by himself? No. God told him to bring certain elders. And then when he struck the rock, those elders saw something that no man can do. They were witnesses. All right. So God does use a lot of witnesses, not like we use witnesses. His witnesses are sure. Our witnesses are kind of like, okay, hedgy, a little bit weak. Or maybe we think they're strong and they're chested out, they wind up being nothing. But that's humans, but not with God. And so he's up there, and Joshua came up with him, and Moses went up to the mountain of Elohim. This is the starting point, or the big starting of the starting point of 70 days. Now, when my wife brought that out, she did not realize, or heard, or we forgot. And he said, now I said to the elders, the 70 elders, and Aaron, and Nadab, and Ahiyu, to stay there. But he took Joshua with him. Not that Joshua means a servant, a minister, a one who is attending the needs of Moses. Whatever Moses needed, that's what Joshua was there for. And so he did his work for him. And he says now, verse 14, he said unto the elders, tarry here for us until we come again to you, the 70, and Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man or any matter to do, let him go to those two men. Okay, so Hur was one of the 70. And then verse 16, very fascinating, isn't it? Why did he have to wait for 7 days? What's the purpose of him waiting for 7 days? Why did God make him wait for 7 days? You never thought about that? And then on the 7th day, lo and behold, he called to Moses out of the cloud. Why? What's this about? Why couldn't God just went up there? There's Joshua, and there's Moses up there. Why didn't God just say, okay, Moses, let's get started? Why did he wait 7 days? What did Yahuwah look like on the 7th day? What did he look like? The light of glory. Very, very bright. And like a fire that does something, consumes. But this fire already had, quote, consumed anything that was on the mountain earlier. Remember? The Ten Commandments? The fire came down and everything with the mountain just went up to smoke. Remember that? Nothing there left. Right? Now, comes down, the fire is there again, and it devours, and what happens? In the eyes of this elders, they're that close, they saw it. They saw what was taking place. And remember Moses bought this bush that was burning, but never burnt? So when we think about God as a devouring fire, sometimes he's not there devouring up just for the sake of devouring up because he's a hot ash or something like that. He has a power of light, power of fire, power to destroy, and power not to destroy. All right? And he says, the glory of the Lord of Yahuwah, like devouring fire on top of the mountain, in the eyes of the elders of Israel. And Moses went into the midst of the cloud. Now, remember, he called out of the midst of the cloud. Remember, Yahshua was in the midst of the cloud, and he called from when he was inside this cloud. Right? What did Moses do? He went inside the cloud. Who gets to go inside the cloud? Why was he have to go inside the cloud for? Why was that such an issue? Why was it so important? What was the cloud all about? What color was the cloud? Dark. Okay. Okay. Any other answer? Any other thought? That's okay. Sounds good too. What does the cloud represent? The Spirit of God. So Moses was drawn into the Spirit of God. You remember what he said about Moses? He said about no other human being. What did he say about Moses when Moses' brother and sister were wanting to have the glory? What, remember he said? I speak plainly to Moses face to face. I don't speak to him in parables, in signs, in wonders. I speak to him up front. He knows everything that I think because he's heard everything I think. And I told him everything I think. And it's not a cloud to him. He sees it clearly. Now he enters into the cloud to receive tremendous amount of information. Nobody's ever done that. Have they? No, only Moses. And so we're looking and seeing an event where God is saying or showing us and showing basic Israel too, that this is the man I have chosen and I'm going to tell him everything that I am, who I am, what I think, how I think, and why I do what I do. I went to the mountain twice. And the second time he went to the mountain, more was told to him than ever before. And that's when he came down the mountain the second time, his face was glorified. His face was bright. It's like, I'm going to take you to school. This is grade one, first mountain. This is graduate school, grade two. 40 days both times. 40 days. God told him and told him and talked with him and explained to him a tremendous amount of things. And we will see in the next few chapters that the main subject matter, of course, is the tabernacle. Now, in the tabernacle, Moses had to see something. We'll get to there later. Moses didn't picture this thing in his mind. God was telling him and describing what it is, but he made a statement to Moses. Make sure you make it exactly how you saw it. So a tremendous amount of the throne of God was in the presence of Moses. including the mercy seat. Incredible when we start going into the rest of this story. Because when we find out at the end of this Exodus, we'll come to accept one thing. Yeah, there is not a human being that knew more about God than Moses. And now, we're here to learn. And we know this much of Revelations. The song of Moses first. Then the song of the Lamb second. Should be, shouldn't the Lamb be first and Moses be second? No. Moses is first, the Lamb is second.